Welcome to the Iron Mind Podcast. Join me, Josh Brumley, as we explore the minds of those who forged their paths through legal battles, business triumphs, and creative conquests. In each episode, we sit down with inspiring individuals who've sharpened their resolve in the fires of entrepreneurship and law. From lawyers breaking barriers to entrepreneurs overcoming obstacles, we uncover the stories behind their iron wills and innovative minds. Get ready for thought-provoking conversations, practical insights, and actionable advice. This is the Iron Mind Podcast. Today we're joined by Don Worley, acclaimed personal injury lawyer and creative force behind the TV series Power of Attorney, Don Worley. Celebrated by Newsweek and Time, Don's blend of legal acumen, creativity, and humor has made him a formidable advocate for justice. He's here to share his strategies for resilience and how to thrive in challenging situations. Thanks for joining us, Don.
Sure, Josh. Glad to be here.
So I'm going to jump right in here. What are some of the key steps in building your firm, McDonald Worley, into a nationally recognized firm? And what advice would you give to lawyers who are looking to take their firm to the next level?
I would say taking care of your clients and work, you got to work hard on these cases and prepare each case as if you're going to have to take it to trial, and actually do focus groups, and mock trials in front of a focus group when you get far, but just really work up each case and get the maximum value. Not only will you make your clients happy, but other lawyers will start referring cases to you as well.
So the best advice for growing your firm is to just do a good job.
Correct. And also customer service with lawyers. My firm got to where we had 400 law firms across the country sending us cases. I think we have around 40,000 now. And wow. It wasn't because I'm a better lawyer than anyone else. It's from customer service that we gave the lawyers sending us cases. For example, we give them a monthly report of all the cases we had together and what status of those cases. So they never had to call me and say, "Hey, Don, what happened to that case I referred you for roundup a year ago?" Every month they get it by email and text that says, "We have the records, it's been filed, it's been settled, etc."
Wonderful. That's great advice for anyone looking to build their practice into something more than what they've got. Collaborating with other attorneys who maybe practice in other states or in other practice areas. Don, how do
correct.
You I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so that's correct. If, like, Josh, you do personal injury, well, then a criminal lawyer might send your clients who got a ticket or got arrested to that criminal lawyer, and you ask that criminal lawyer to send you cases of people who've been injured.
Seems easy enough. Don, how do you approach client advocacy in personal injury cases, and what strategies do you employ to ensure that these stories that are so important and the needs that are so important are really the front and center of your legal strategy to move the case forward?
I think that the narrative is a part of everything that you do. I think you would never give your client a script, because it's your client's truth, it's your client's story, and they would never remember your script that you give them anyway. You just let your client tell their truth, tell their story, and be believable, and just let them know that always be truthful, because if you lie, you lose. And then as a lawyer, you've got to take that story and you've got to convey it in your opening statement to the jury. And the way you do that is just by practicing it over and over in front of focus groups and mock trials until you see which way is the best way to deliver the message.
So find their authentic true self with them to tell their story for them.
Correct.
Easy. Don, as you're aware, and I think everyone at my firm is aware, personal injury law can be emotionally taxing and really complex. How do you navigate the challenges and pressures associated with representing victims of really serious injuries?
Well, sometimes you just have to stop talking and just listen. You have to learn how to listen to your clients. Just be quiet and listen, hear what they have to say. And sometimes they're mad, and it's not necessarily they're angry at you. They're just taking it out on you because they're in a tough place of life. They can't do what they used to do. They're different than they used to be, and they can't work, and they can't go out and play football with their kids. So sometimes they take it out on you, and you just have to listen and realize they're not really angry with you, they're just in a bad place.
Do you have an example of potentially a person who had maybe traumatic brain injury issues that was a difficult person to communicate with because of the complexities that their injury caused?
Yes, I think we've had difficulty communicating with several different people, and I found that a lot of times text messages work well also. And like particularly if someone is a survivor of sexual abuse, talking about it makes them very uncomfortable, but they sometimes find it easier to text back and forth. But someone with a traumatic brain injury, they may not be able to text depending on the severity of the brain injury. But sometimes if they get irritated in a conversation, that sometimes maybe texting might be a little better.
Right. What about approaches to preparing for trial? Do you have tips or resources for younger, less experienced trial attorneys to sharpen their teeth and to get better at developing those effective trial strategies?
Well, the only way to do it is to go try it in front of mock juries before you try it before a real one. I think it's malpractice if you don't, to be honest, because you don't know how much money to even ask for until focus groups have told you what they think the value is. Obviously, anybody's kid can add up medical bills. But as far as the intangibles like pain and suffering, mental anguish, how you're different today than you were before, all that needs to come from focus groups of people in that area where you're going to try the case.
What is your method for obtaining focus groups? Do you use a company? Do you obtain them internally?
Yeah, I cheat a little bit. I have a company that does short-term employment. In other words, gets people jobs each day. And what do is they hire for that day, they get me a cross-culture representation of that community. You know, you might have an older white guy, a younger Latino woman, a middle-aged black man. Yeah.
All the demographics. A
sample of all the demographics. And so it's people that just are between jobs for whatever reason. Maybe they're retired and they just do so. But there's other ways to do it. I mean, you can do an ad and, you know, you can do ads in Facebook Marketplace. You can do ads and people still use Green Sheet. I don't know, wherever you live, newspaper, just to get people and even do it on Saturdays. And you provide pizza for lunch and pay them a little bit. But it's not as expensive as someone thinks. I mean, some lawyers hire jury consultants to do it, and it's thousands of dollars just to do a mock trial. But I don't, in my opinion, as long as you get a cross section of the community to come listen to your case, you don't really need all of that.
When you do these mock trials or have these folks from the communities listen to how you'd like to present your arguments for damages, do you put on both sides of the trial? Like, do you have a insurance defense attorney actor come in and put on your case, or do you just put on the plaintiff's case? How do you do that?
No, we have a lawyer. Sometimes it's a lawyer from our law firm, or sometimes we get a lawyer friend to come in and be the defense lawyer. But no, it wouldn't work just presenting our side, because we'd be like, we win every time.
Yeah.
So no, we have the defense. In fact, we'll start off doing focus groups where we just do a neutral statement, and we'll just read the position of both the plaintiff and the defendant and not tell them which side we're on and get their reaction to it.
That's super interesting. Wow. How do you stay informed and continue to learn in this field of personal injury? Are there websites that you get most up to date information for changes in law or big cases, or how do you stay tied into the finger on the pulse?
Well, you know, I'm not one thing I learned as a as a younger lawyer is that you're not good at everything, and one thing I wasn't good at is a briefing attorney. So I've always had briefing attorneys, and what they do, they keep up to breast with research and the law and you know, making sure that, because we always draft a jury charge first to know the status of the law and what we need to prove. And then after we draft a jury charge, then we draft a petition to line up with the jury charge. So the drafting is done by someone else, but as far as cases that are up and coming, usually by attending lawyer conferences.
That makes sense. In what ways has technology changed the landscape of personal injury, and have you incorporated things like media, like your show, Power of Attorney, Don Worley, into your practice?
Well, one thing I do is I send out a monthly report to clients, and I do a short video each month that goes to their email and by text to their phone that just tells them what's going on with their case in general, and I send it to lawyers who refer us cases. So I use video on a video platform to send out each month. So, and then obviously we record every deposition and every Zoom deposition, and so that we can play them to focus groups later. And then of course we record the focus group deliberating. So we use video a lot in our practice.
Do you think that recording the focus group deliberations has paid for itself in being able to hear as if you were hearing in the middle of a jury's deliberations what they have to say?
Yes, that's where you learn about your case, what's important to them, what's not important to them, and what you need to emphasize more or de-emphasize more. Yeah, that's how you learn what they think.
That's wonderful. What key factors do you believe contribute to achieving justice and fair compensation for victims?
Well, whether the defendant has the money, if they have an insurance policy that is adequate. You know, sometimes a person might be driving a car drunk and hit and kill a family of four, and they only have $30,000 in insurance, and then they have no personal money. So obviously what you get from that settlement is not fair compensation.
Right.
So I would say solvency of the defendant. And then also the number of plaintiffs. I practice in the area of mass torts a lot, and you'll have, like, you know, 3M earplug cases. At one point there were 350,000 claimants, so they're not going to get fair and complete compensation because there's no way 3M could pay 350,000 people fair and reasonable compensation, or they would go bankrupt.
Right. It makes it tough with those mass torts, right? That's a Army earplug case, right? The 3M cases.
Right.
Super interesting. What advice would you offer to new lawyers who are entering the field of personal injury or developing their skills as personal injury attorneys?
I would say that, you know, what I referenced to before as far as like working up a case as if you're going to trial, I think a lot of lawyers get into personal injury because they think you can just sign up a case and settle it and make a quick fee, and that's just doesn't do you any favors or the client any favors, because you can, the only way to make, you know, a good living or and to really give your clients fair compensation is to work up a case for its full value.
Do you think it should be considered malpractice to not try cases?
Well, no, not to specifically not try them, but I think that you should, if you're honest with yourself, like I was about drafting, and you say, I'm not a trial lawyer, I don't want to go to trial, I'm going to work with them pre-litigation, and if I can't get it settled, I'm going to partner with a litigation firm, and I'm going to refer it to that litigation firm who's going to share their fees with me for the work that I did pre-litigation. You work a partnership with a firm that will do that side of it. But I remember I got a case a few years ago, and the client said that the law firm dropped them, and a statute of limitations was the next week, and I called that firm, and they said, yeah, we don't file cases, so we just drop the client if we can't settle it. And that would be malpractice, in my opinion.
Yeah. It seems like there's a lot of firms that are, like you said, interested in resolving cases as quickly as they can, maybe in a way that's detrimental to the client. And the client doesn't know the value, the true value of their claims or the true nature of their injuries. And if the lawyer's not doing a good job illustrating that to the client, they're doing harm to the communities that they're hoping to serve.
Right. And it's easy to get a $1 million settlement on a $10 million case.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. How do you maintain effective communication with clients who are sometimes going through the most challenging times of their life?
Like I said, we send monthly reports to them by text and email that just says, here's what's going on with your case. I do a short video to them, and then we also have customer relations employees that all they do is speak to clients on the phone all day.
How many attorneys do you have at your firm, and how many staff total?
We have 15 and about a staff of 50.
Wow. And you're a nationwide law firm, right?
Correct.
Are there any cases that you'd love to give a shout out specifically to, that if anyone's listening, you'd love to help support their case by teaming up?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm 100% referral from other lawyers. That's how I get all of my cases. So typically I get some of the personal injury cases that are going to need to be filed and go to trial. I get some of those across the country, but I also get a lot of the mass tort cases because some lawyers don't do medical device or pharmaceutical litigation cases. So if they get one, or they, if one walks into their office or they happen to advertise for them, they'll partner with my firm on those cases.
That's great. The thing that strikes me about that is that you're saying you don't really do any marketing. Is that what you're saying? That the marketing focus for your firm is to other attorneys, not to potential referral sources or people that could send you a case, like a chiropractor or something like that. You're looking for attorneys that are adjacent to the industry or in the industry in other states that just want to team up with a firm that's better suited for litigation. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. We market 100% to attorneys. I don't do any advertising.
That's wonderful. Wow. Handling high profile cases often comes with additional media attention and public scrutiny. How do you manage the pressure of that media scrutiny and attention when you're trying to focus on the legal aspects of a case?
I try not to speak very much or say too much. I usually try to, if they ask for a status of what's going on, I might say, but I don't try to give, I don't like jumping on the mic saying, we're going to crush them and da, da, da. I don't know. I'm not that kind of attorney. So I would just say that, we just hope the jury does the right thing in this case.
Do you have any feeling one way or the other about attorneys that like to, do the sales puffery thing and be in that spotlight saying I'm the best lawyer there is and I'm God's gift to the law, that kind of thing? Do you have any statements
no.
to make to those lawyers?
I say you be you, because the audience will know if you're trying to be someone other than yourself. So that's not me. It would come across as really fake if I tried to do it. But if that's their personality, then I would say be themselves.
Authentic true self. That's the overwhelming theme of this interview. That's great.
Yeah. If you're going to lie to somebody, don't lie to yourself.
Running a successful law firm like yours must require a lot of legal expertise, but also business acumen. How do you balance the business side of your practice with your commitment to legal excellence?
People that are smarter than you as far as in the area of business management. So like I have a CFO and a COO. An operations manager. They are not lawyers, but they know how to run businesses, and so they help me in those. I mean, I have an MBA, so I'm not a complete business idiot, but most lawyers have no knowledge, business knowledge whatsoever.
Crazy, right? I also have an MBA, and do your senior C-suite staff, are they MBAs, or are they just business savvy people that you picked up along the way that have been with you since day one? How did you find those staff?
Business savvy people. Some of them have college. One of them doesn't have a college degree. Our operations director, she just knows how to run operations. And then the others have, the CFO has a degree, but also a long history in private equity and et cetera. And then our COO has a business degree, but also a long military background. So different walks of life that just made up our team.
Super interesting. I think it's important to mix those business professionals into what you're trying to build. And it's easy to lose focus on the business side, when money starts rolling in, you just assume, yeah, I'm making money. Why question it? But when you really, when you do the work and dig deep on the data, you might not be as happy with the results as you could be. And you won't ever know without the tools that you have to build for your business. So I'm a huge proponent of KPIs for my staff and a lot of different types of financial reports to make sure that we're keeping our finger on the pulse and running a healthy business for the future of my staff, for the future of myself, and for the future of my clients. Super important.
Right. There's even a book that Mike Morse wrote called Fireproof that teaches young lawyers about setting up APIs.
Yeah, I super big fan of Mike Morse. Love that guy. So last question. Mentorship can be crucial in legal careers. How do you approach mentorship within your firm? And what advice do you have for young attorneys to obtain mentorship?
I think you'll find the right fit of person to mentor you. And you can just try asking questions of different lawyers and the ones that communicate better with you and match your style, you'll start gravitating towards them. And most senior lawyers are happy to share their experience with a young lawyer, especially if it's for the good of the firm.